I was just like, look at this beautiful human that sits before me. This person that's younger than me too. And she thinks for some reason she is unlovable or she's not worthy enough unless she reaches these things. That's so heartbreaking. I said, that's just completely heartbreaking that she thinks she has to do that. And that she pushes herself so hard to the point of sometimes using food in this way or harming herself with food. And that she thinks for any second that she's not worthy or deserving of love. And then I had this interesting thought where as I looked into her eyes and I was like, you do the same thing, Jacqueline.
Welcome to the Binge Breakers podcast. I'm Jacqueline. I am here to teach you how I overcame bulimia and my binge eating disorder, and how you can too. Through simple steps of mind management, repairing your relationship with yourself, understanding your habits, and intuitive eating.
Disclaimer, this recording is not intended to be used as medical advice, nor is it advice from a doctor. I am a coach, a recovery coach, and I offer advice from my own experience and my clients. But please, if you think you are in need of medical help, seek it immediately. We'll also be talking about subjects such as binging and purging, depression, and other sensitive topics. So if those trigger you, please listen at your own discretion.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. And I'm smiling and giggling and laughing because it's the first time I'm really recording with my face on camera, the podcast in a while. I think I've done like videos and I've done just voice recordings for a long time, but I just felt like it was time. And I know that I upload these to YouTube. So for those of you guys on YouTube watching, you can see my face and my background, which is basically my room, but I'm moving out of this place soon. This apartment has been great for me for the time being in getting out of a bad situation and trying to find a place to land on my feet and kind of get my ground again. But now I think it's time. And now that I'm planning on basically moving to Mexico for at least a month, we'll see if it's longer, I'm definitely moving out. So yeah, this background you're seeing is probably going to change again, but that's okay. But I want to talk about everything, speaking of Mexico, that happened on the retreat. But before that, I just want to acknowledge some things happening in the world. So obviously, there's protests going on everywhere in the U.S., and there's obviously horrendous things going on in the world. Gaza, who knows? Like, obviously, I know, actually. Like, I see pictures on Instagram of dying babies every day. Like, there's this genocide happening. And it's awful. And on the same side, I have lots of Jewish clients and Jewish friends. And it's like, if you say anything that is against the war, there's this pressure as someone who is a figure, public figure, not that anyone's expecting me to talk about this. I talk about binge eating or bulimia, that if you say anything like ceasefire or you talk about ending the war, then it's kind of seen as anti-Semitic and against Jewish people. And that's not what I want, but I don't obviously approve of any tactics that are being used right now. I don't know. I'm not pro-war, right? I just, in a peachy place where everyone could just be nice and care about humanity and not be so greedy for power or money or whatever it is they want, the resources that they want, this wouldn't probably be happening. But obviously there's a long-term conflict happening here and it's all come up. And I don't want to pretend that me, some white girl from the Midwest, with very basic Christian household principles that I was raised in, has all the answers. I don't. But I just don't want to appear tone deaf, and I don't want to act like none of this is happening. You know, like, it feels strange to talk about these things. And I was talking with a friend about egos and how we all get caught up in ourselves and think we're kind of the center of the universe. And technically we are the center of our universes, but we're not. And I think it's sometimes just good to point out and to stay informed about these things, because it puts problems into perspective, I suppose, and then makes me wonder how much more we could be doing in the world to try to help people like that, people that are in situations that are much more dire than ours, and just kind of gets you out of your own body and head and into the real world. But all that being said, I know I didn't really say much of anything other than I believe in people's right to protest. I believe that the violence happening and the genocide happening is wrong. I also believe that there's not a simple answer per se, and I just don't know. Because so I sat down with a follower on my Instagram who was interested in going to a retreat of mine, but also was Jewish, and she had pointed out when I had posted about, you know, a call for ceasefire, that I was really not just insulting, but kind of doing damage to anyone, any of my Jewish followers. And so when she said she was interested in the retreat, I also said, like, hey, can you just like tell me your perspective and everything? I'd love to hear more about it. I just want to listen. She told me all like her perspectives on the war and that sort of stuff. And something she said to me that I guess I'll repeat here if I am repeating it correctly, but she said, you know, don't just say things to say things to look like you're informed, firstly, which I agree. Like, if you don't have something productive to say or informed to say, don't say it. And then also don't paint it as though Israel's not doing anything, or that, you know, be careful not to make it seem so one-sided or simple. And I'm butchering her words, but I think that's just what I want to get across, is I definitely support the end of the genocide and violence and starvation and killing of children happening in Gaza right now. And I also don't want that to happen to anyone, and don't support anti-Semitism or violence against any group of people, especially not just especially any group of people, but in particular right now. I know a lot of Jewish people feel unsafe, so my heart goes out to you, and like, I don't know the answers, and I'm so sorry all of this is happening. And I just feel the need to say it because it just feels tone deaf. And if like you don't know this is happening, go follow some like news pages on Instagram. Go listen to NPR's just up first podcast. Go listen to, like, I'm someone who will definitely avoid listening to the news sometimes. And it's partly because I have the privilege to do it. I'm, again, like a Midwest white girl. A lot of things don't affect me the way they do other populations. And so it's part of privilege that I can just avoid sometimes the news. And I also sometimes avoid it because it's just super unpleasant, right? It's uncomfortable. But that is the reality of what's happening. And I think when you kind of put yourself in that reality, you don't cocoon yourself in whatever bubble you built for yourself, you see what's actually happening. And I think it really puts things into perspective. And then it also makes me think, and maybe it makes you think, how can I support people like that? How can I do better? What can I do to be more involved? And how can I just show up for the people there? So yeah. Anyways, it feels really vulnerable, and I'm just like dreading posting that. But I don't want to be this one of those people that just didn't say anything. You know, I there's been times in history where I haven't said anything, and I really regretted it. And it was partly because of influences that I had, but also partly because I was just a coward, and I don't want to do that. So I just want to put that out there. Let's just make this podcast political. Let's go. All right, moving forward, let's talk about the retreat. So I wrote down a list of lessons that I learned going to the retreat center. And for those of you guys that don't know, I hosted last year a retreat in San Pancho and Nayarit, Mexico, at the Ocho Retreat Center there. And it was so amazing. I wanted to go back. And so I, again, hosted a small retreat this past month, April 15th, I think, or 17th is when it was. And it was just, again, with one client because I didn't plan enough in advance, and I'm planning on hosting another one in November. So if you are interested, reach out to me. It's not officially on my website yet, but it will be soon. So I can get people kind of signed up for that. But it turned out to be just as amazing, if not more profound, than the last time. And so I wanted to discuss what happened on that retreat and just some stories to share with you and lessons along the way. But I'd say one thing is that this time, the retreat, last time, I found out something really traumatic, and it had happened the day I left to go to the retreat center, and it was kind of the end, basically, of a long-term relationship for me, and there was lots of stuff coming up, and like all this realizations had built up, and then the retreat happened. And so when I was on the retreat last time, well, it was the best place I could be, and I still took a ton of value from it, and my client did too. And actually, me being in that vulnerable raw state really helped my client, oddly enough. We could both kind of feel together. I was not, I think, as able to see a lot of the things that I can see now being a completely different person. And so when I went on this retreat, I was able to take in a lot more of my surroundings. Because in all honesty, last time I went to the retreat, I was show up and be there for my client, and we'd walk around the retreat center, we'd go do excursions. But then between those times, I was in my room crying. I was in my room sobbing my eyes out for like 3 or 4 days straight, however long I was there. So you can see like what type of thing, but this was not the case. I was shown to the retreat happy. I'm in a good place, mentally well, all those things. And so the first thing I noticed about the retreat center is that, or when I was on the retreat, is that I just got to walk around a lot more and appreciate San Pancho, which is actually called San Francisco, apparently, but the nickname is San Pancho. And I was able to take in the city, or not city, the town a lot more. And it's a small surf town. And my client wanted to walk to the beach a lot, so we walked to the beach a lot. I went in the water a lot more. I enjoyed swimming so much. There was something about the water that was just calling to me. And that's part of the reason I want to go back to that area, is because I want to learn how to surf this summer. I just don't know why it's taken me till almost 30 to figure that out. But I think I will learn how to actually surf. And I was able to take in the culture. We actually did a food and culture tour. And so we had, what was her name? We had Colmeta, one of the employees at the retreat center. She took my client and I on a little tour down to the downtown area of San Pancho, and told us, not only like took us to this amazing restaurant that was very healthy. It was, again, I think I've said it already, but it was kind of built outside and there were plants everywhere. So you were just kind of eating in a garden almost of plants, just on the walls everywhere. A lot of buildings were like that too, with just tons of potted plants. And there was like trees growing out of the ground sometimes in certain buildings, how they had built it. So that was really, really neat to see. And you're just eating amongst the earth and the trees and the plants. And it just felt very grounded. But then the food that they made was very whole and medicinal and delicious and made with love and all those things. So, and then while we were eating, and then we toured this local garden, and we just learned a lot more about how San Pancho was built and how the community has done things to uplift it. And a big part of it was with that food tour, we learned a lot about how food can heal you, how food is medicine, how food doesn't have to be your enemy. And that was really neat. Another cool thing we did was a cacao workshop and ceremony. So my client and I, we made raw cacao from cacao beans. So we took them, roasted them, peeled them, put them through a grinder, a manual grinder, and then and it was interesting, my client was like watching the oil come out of the cacao beans, separating a little bit as we ground it. And she was like, it was neat to see something like oil, something I would be scared of normally, come out of something that was whole from the earth. It's not bad, you know, it's not evil, it's not harmful. And then at each step of the process too, we'd feel the food, we'd try the cacao at different stages, and then we made raw cacao chocolates, and then also raw cacao, basically hot cocoa, but without the sugar. And then the chocolates that we made, we had this like very raw looking sugar, but that was really cool. And afterwards, what we did about the ceremony was that we sat down with the hot cacao, and we again treated it like medicine. And during the whole process, one of the people that were doing the ceremony with us, she was singing, and I couldn't understand what she was saying because it was in Spanish. I'm learning how to speak Spanish again since I'm going back to Mexico, and I do not want to be one of those stupid gringos that just can't speak Spanish. So I was like really like upset, but it was beautiful. And the woman said during the cacao ceremony, the other person, the leader of it, she said, "What is your intention with this food? Let it heal you. Let it be there for you." And then she had my client and I sit face to face, cross-legged, and hold one hand. And I think, I don't know what we were doing with the other hand. Maybe our other hand was over our heart or something, but definitely we're holding one hand, sitting face to face, pretty close. And we had to stare directly into each other's eyes for like 5 minutes during this whole song or something. And I think she was saying things like, "Look at this person in front of you. What's going on? Like, what is your intention here? And what can they teach you?" And my client, for some context, without giving away too many details, I'm going to talk with her tomorrow because I really, just to check in, but she also wants to be on the podcast to kind of disclose her experience. But she's 23. So she was interesting to work with someone younger this time. The person I was with the last time was older than me. But this person, 23, but we're both still in our 20s. And I'm going to show you my experience of doing that, and then I'll share her experience. When I was staring at her, the first part of it was just like really awkward. I was like, I didn't know they were going to do that too. So I went into this blind. I thought the cacao ceremony, the best part about it would be that it's going to teach us to appreciate the food that we're making, taking something from its whole form to then processing it and showing that it's not bad, especially something like chocolate that can very trigger people, you know, and showing how you can appreciate and be methodical with food and that it can be this very medicinal thing that is healing to the body and make you feel good and that you can appreciate it and be around it. But then the ceremony, I just thought that'd be a nice time to be present, but I didn't know they're going to make us stare at each other for like 5 minutes. And so when we did that, the first part of it, I was like, try not to laugh. And I was like, I gotta be serious, I gotta be professional, and I gotta stare into my client's eyes and like this, we're doing this. And then my client, she said the same thing. But then as I was staring at her, we had during this retreat many reflective conversations. And one of the conversations she said was that she still wanted to lose weight. And because she wanted to be seen as worthy, she wanted the validation from it, all these things. I'm not using her own words, but something along those lines. And I looked at this person as I was staring at her. It wasn't just an appearance thing. I was just like, look at this beautiful human that sits before me, this person that's younger than me, too. And she thinks for some reason she is unlovable or she's not worthy enough unless she reaches these things. That's so heartbreaking. I said, that's just completely heartbreaking that she thinks she has to do that and that she pushes herself so hard to the point of sometimes using food in this way or harming herself with food, and that she thinks for any second that she's not worthy or deserving of love. And then I had this interesting thought where as I looked into her eyes and I was like, you do the same thing, Jacqueline. You think you're unworthy of love if you don't reach certain criteria. You sometimes still struggle with body image and think you're not worthy if you aren't at a certain weight or at a certain appearance to people. You're doing the same things. How could you sit and say that? And yet you do this to yourself. And it was like looking in a mirror, is what I thought when I was looking at her. If I can see that this person is so worthy of love and is deserving right now as we sit here, she does not need to change a thing. And again, I want to make it very clear, it's not about appearance. Like looking into someone's eyes for that long, it's like you're staring into their soul. It gets very intense and you see what's beneath, not just the human or the flesh that they're in. And I realize like this person's inherently worthy and nothing, they're always going to be this way. And if they're inherently worthy, I am too, right? And I should live by that. So that was really powerful. And my client said it was interesting to look into my eyes and see that one, she said it was kind of looking like into an older, wiser version of me. First, I was just like, oh man, that's interesting. I am getting older. I'm 29 now. Like to a 23-year-old, I am getting older and I'm wiser. But also, she said similar things of like, if I can, how could this person kind of think any less of themselves? And that also, if this person was able to do these things, able to recover, I am too. And that was powerful for her. So I just want to share that experience because I was kind of thought that experience, the cacao ceremony, was going to be the least powerful thing. And yet it turned out to be a really intense moment. And we had it our last day there, which I'm really glad that we did because at that point we got to know each other really well. And so that was an interesting lesson and moment of just like pure love. And then we also went to the beach one day and this clay beach that's a more private beach. It's not like the main beach in San Pancho, it's in a different town. But the beach is interesting because you have to walk to it through a jungle. And that's one thing I have a little bit of struggle with the retreat center. I love the retreat center, but it's not very accessible to people who maybe like can't walk or have certain disabilities. Like, I don't know. I was thinking on the way there, we could probably I have a client who uses a wheelchair, and I was thinking about her on the retreat, and I'm like, We could get her through here, but it would be difficult. And I need to find experiences where everyone can be have ex access to those things. So anyway, that's another side note of like guilt that I have. But outside of that, what I'm going to search for more retreat centers, especially in Europe, that might be able to do that. But anyway, the clay beach was interesting because it's not directly related to bulimia recovery at all. Like some of the experiences I chose, like we did a cannabis ceremony that was really cool. And then we also did a breathing ceremony and we did body massages and a lot of like just present moments and journaling. But the beach day, it's kind of just sounds weird because really what it is we go to this beach, we walk and hike through the jungle. It's like a 15, 20-minute hike through some pretty hilly jungle things, and it's sweaty and it's hot. And then you finally get to this gorgeous beach. And then I had to do it this time. You dig in a hole for clay, and then you mix that clay with salt water, and then you put it all over your body, and then you sit by the ocean. And then after the clay is dried, you go and wash it off in the ocean and swim around, and then you have lunch, and then you hike back. And you say that to someone, you're like, what on earth does this have to do with binge eating at all? But my client one can't swim. She can swim a little bit, but can't swim. And so at first I was kind of like, oh, we can totally like teach you how to swim, that's fine. But the waves are really intense that day, and that's another story. But I was like, it's probably not a good idea if she goes swimming in those waves. I think she might, even if she survives, like I think I could save her. She would still be traumatized, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to have her life my ha on my hands, and I don't want to traumatize her. So, like, both those things. But she ended up wading in the water and stuff like that. But, anyways, we get to the beach. It's uncomfortable and sweaty. And then our guide, she puts the towels down and stuff like that and has our lunch available. But she's like, I'm going to watch our stuff. Do you want to go do the clay thing? And I realized last time I had a guide that she did the clay thing for us. But this guy knew I had been here before, and she was like, you're gonna do it. I'm like, okay, all right, I'm gonna do it. So I go over kind of out of my comfort zone, and I find there's this like deep hole. It's not a cavern, but I could have put my body in it if I needed to. But basically, there's this on the side of a mountain where we're by the beach. The beach is like secluded into these two mountain hills, and like there's only one other party there, and then there's us. There's just like no one on this beach. But in the side of the mountain, there's this kind of like deep hole that has been carved out by many a people taking clay, which again, I felt kind of guilty for. I was like, maybe I won't keep doing this. We can just go to the beach because digging out that clay seems kind of wrong. We don't need to put it all over our bodies. But I had to basically, in a bikini, skimpy one, might I add. I don't know why I decided that was a good idea, but I had to like put almost my whole body into that hole and scrape it out with my hands. And me, like I'm a farm girl, but I still was like, oh, there's probably bugs and stuff, and I'm gonna get all dirty already. But I did it, even though I didn't really want to go in there. Like I'm also kind of scared of cavey type places, but I got in there, my head's in there, I'm scraping through, finally get enough clay, and my client's just watching me, probably like, what in the world? And then I mix it up with salt water. I show her how to like put it all on her skin. We make sure it's like covering our entirety of our bodies. And the clay is pretty good for your skin and hair. It's very nice. It makes your skin feel very smooth afterwards, and it's exfoliating. And then we sat out by the waves and just kind of sat in that feeling of being covered in clay from the earth, which was uncomfortable, but interesting. And then my client, we have to wash off, but my client can't swim. So, and the waves are pretty intense. They're like crashing down, but I really wanted to go in the water. And so what she did is she got a little bit in to where she could still stand, but the waves, like the waves were just intensely, especially by the shoreline, the pool of the waves wanted to pull anyone that was standing there back in. So she had to kind of fight against the waves a lot, but it was uncomfortable for her. And it was a good little experience of being close to something she was scared of, but still in somewhat control. And then she washed the clay off that way. I had the stupid idea of like, I'm a good swimmer, really good swimmer. I was on swim team. I love swimming, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to show her that actually the waves once you get out a little bit, the shoreline is the worst part where they come crashing down. But once you get past that initial wave, then it's better and you can just ride waves, right? The waves go up and down. Instead of fighting against them, what you're supposed to do is just let them carry you up and down, and that's how it's supposed to be. So I swim out a bit and my theory is working because that's how it usually works. And she was just like, oh my gosh, that's so cool, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what she said, but she said her reaction was like that. And then there's this wave coming in and it's a big wave. And I want to show her that also you can dive under waves. Like that's a thing you can do is that instead of going on top of it, if they're crashing down, especially, you can kind of go under the wave and then you'll come out on top. So this big wave comes in and I just do what I always do and I dive. And I don't know if it's that I didn't dive low enough or that it just wasn't going to work out and it was too treacherous of a wave, but that didn't work out very well. And I go dive into the wave and then my body just slams to the ground and I'm completely covered with water. Like I don't, the water, there's no surface in sight. And I'm suddenly like on the sea floor. And I realize, I don't know how many seconds passed, but I realize very quickly that I have no control over my body. There's nothing I can do. The waves are going to do what they will for me. And it was like being tossed around. It was very violent. I was okay, obviously, but there was this immediate sense of like, oh, I thought I was in control and I have absolutely no control. And if the waves don't calm down, I am screwed. And there was a moment of panic and there was a moment of like wanting to freak out. But I knew based on everything I've learned about water over the years that, the ocean is a force and you can't control it whatsoever. So the only thing I could do is just kind of let it pass. And I knew it wasn't too far out. So the best hope I had was just to let the waves do what they will with me, and I will pop up when I pop up. So I just let myself glide a little bit, and it probably was only maybe 5 or 7 seconds, but finally I was able to get control again and pop back up out of the water. And then I kind of quickly turned around, so just like, oh man, where am I? And I was definitely moved, probably like a 5, 10 yards or something, like pretty far. And my client just goes, you were here, and then you were there. In seconds. And I was like, yeah, that's what water will do with you. And yeah, at this point, got out of the water. I was like, I don't want that experience again. It's a little treacherous. But then after that experience, we were talking about it. And I was just saying, like, urges are like waves, and you can't control the urge and you can't control the feeling, but you can certainly ride it and be with it. And I think there's a level of surrender you have to have. And that's how you can handle urges. And that's why this is so important to be here. And then after that, we had a little bit of a lunch. And I forgot that, I don't know, I think my client told them, but they forgot. My client doesn't like potatoes. And they served us potatoes. Like the main part of our dish was potatoes. And then after that meal, my client had some anyway. We were sitting down watching the water before we left, and she was like, we were just journaling to kind of record our experience. And she goes, urges are like waves, and I'm learning how to swim. And we were talking about, she's like, it was really helpful for me to see it them in that light and to kind of hear how you talk about water and then be partially in the water myself. Like I'm learning how to swim and I can handle urges in that way. And I think urges, like thinking of water, especially untamed water, like the ocean, very, very helpful. And then she said, I can be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And she spoke about how the whole experience of going to the beach was a lot of fun, but it was also super uncomfortable, being sweaty and gross, putting dirt and clay all over our bodies, being in the water. There's sand in our hoo-has, like there's just no getting around it. When both of us came home to take showers, there's tons of sand in our bathing suits. And and then the eating the potatoes. And she said, I'm so used to in my own world being able to control my environment at all times. And if I feel uncomfortable or sweaty, I can go take a shower. If I don't like something, I can do something else. But here, there's really nothing I could do. And the surrender of it was really important for me. And so it might be a really good lesson to you is just like, you can be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's what I felt like. I was feeling again insecure about the beach experience. Like, I hope that this helps them. I think it will. Like, a big part of their treat is to surrender to your surroundings, be present, and let yourself be a little bit uncomfortable as you go through these experiences. And it's going to be helpful for you. And if you can learn how to be uncomfortable, then that's going to help you learn how to deal with urges. And it did exactly what I wanted it to do for her. So that was really cool. I'm looking at my journal now. Another big lesson was just like food is nourishment. And I know I've said it before, but I wanted to say it again. Like, food isn't your enemy. And every kind of meal we had there was pretty nourishing and helpful. And I think one of the bigger things that was maybe I'll have a few, I have a few more things to share about it. One, we just had a lot of good conversations at the retreat. The cannabis ceremony was cool. The breathwork ceremony was cool. Just times where we're really breathing and being in our body and having these aha moments and reflections. That was deep and it was helpful. I realized that there was a lot of grief for me to go through still. My client realized things about her family during the ceremonies and how she could be more rooted to the ground and stuff like that. But the simplicity of this retreat is we spent a lot of time talking and journaling and just being there and present. My client loved pulling the tarot cards, and each time we pulled the tarot cards, there was some sort of very in tune message for both of us, but especially for her. I thought there were a lot of good cards, and she ended up buying her own tarot card deck on the last day there from the downtown area. But one day in particular, we went through an exercise. We've been having these moments of talking about what's behind the bulimia, what's behind the binge eating, all that sort of stuff, and her history and her family life, and like these things just organically came up. But one thing on the, I think it was Sunday, because we had more time that day, we spent time discussing what her plan was going back. And we went through for a while what it's like when she has binge urges and the thoughts and situations, the thoughts that she has when it comes up, and how to talk to it differently, and how to really go through the script that her brain says that makes her binge, and what she wants to respond to differently. We also went in depth about how a lot of times when she wants to binge or go for food, she wants that sense of safety and comfort. And we talked a lot about how she can have that comfort in other ways, how she can make herself feel safe. And one reflection she took away from the breath ceremony that she repeated back to me that I want to repeat to you here is this idea of, I can be safe in my body. How can I be safe in my own body? And really experiencing and affirming to yourself, you are safe in your body. It is okay in your own body. So that was helpful for her, I thought. And we just spoke a lot about these conversations, really getting to like what's behind her eating disorder, her familiar background and stuff like that. Then also, how can she address it? And that was good. And everyone's individual and unique, but being in an environment where you feel safe to talk about these things, being in the Osho Retreat Center, which is very grounded and nurturing, I think it was really good for her. And to recognize when she's away from all those things, partly why she's binging is being kind of in these crazy environments where she doesn't feel safe, and she needs to learn how to comfort herself in a different way and change the environment so she can be more like that. That's partly why I'm going back to Mexico too. Maybe it's not at Ocho, but it's somewhere, because I just realize how much I'm suffering in my environment in a way. Like, your environments really do affect you in your binge eating. One day we did something called ecstatic dance. We did morning movement every single day, and our instructor was amazing. But my favorite day was the ecstatic dance day, where we went through something called the five rhythms. You can look it up. But she had a playlist where we just intuitively moved for like an hour to these different songs. And one was very what they'd say it would be masculine, where you're kind of moving in this confident energy. Another one was very frantic and crazy and just unhinged. That was, I think, the masculine and the unhinged one was my favorite. Another one was like this almost light as a fairy movement. Another one's like slow moving, going down to the earth, that sort of stuff. And then there are a few others I can't remember. But that is something I've been practicing since being home, is just playing a song and really moving wildly to it, or capturing different energies depending on the song. And it helped so much be in my body. And my client said something interesting. She more adapted, she was felt more comfortable in the kind of like fairy-like delicate movements. And she has a history with dance. I felt much more comfortable in my masculine energy, I think, and stuff like that. But both of us had the same takeaway, where it was like appreciating our body and realizing our body's allowed to move and allowed to take up space. For me, I've always had the story of like, I'm a taller girl, I'm a bigger girl, and therefore I already take up so much room. I need to make myself smaller somehow. And the ecstatic dance to really embrace it, I had these thoughts while moving my legs around the palapa. I was just like, no, these limbs are long and they deserve to be as stretched out as possible. They deserve to be as big as possible, as wide as possible. And I suddenly was like dancing like I was 5 years old again, a little girl. Like I never had those thoughts as a little girl that I take up too much space. But then conditioning and stuff like that over time made me feel like I needed to be smaller. But being as big as possible during those movements and wildly flailing my limbs around was so much fun and really healing, honestly. And it seemed healing for my client too. So that's something I'd recommend doing at home or trying to go to a class like that. The last lesson, I have a drawing eraser. I've been drawing a lot more recently in my hands that I'm messing with. The last two lessons I'll share. One, the world is much bigger than we think it is, kind of going back to my earlier statement before this podcast. Like, I think whenever I travel or go to a different place, I realize how, again, small my little environment and bubble was and how much more there is out there, and also how differently culture is. Just talking to a friend about that, about the different cultures that they grew up in and how they don't hold on to anger and stuff like that. And then seeing San Pancho, there was just like a very chill energy. There wasn't this frantic, like, work, work, work. If you work harder, then you're cooler. If you work all night, then you're seen as worthy. And then if you're working on the weekends, then you're even better. And you're so, like, hustling, awesome. There was very much so I appreciate time. We watched the sunset. And in the photos of my sunset thing, there was this little family in front of us. And I didn't try to clip them out or anything of the sunset. I was like, how pervert. Like, that's such a great capturing, encapsulating moment of this little family having this wonderful, wholesome moment watching the sunset together. And that's what's really important in life. I think that's what it taught me. And I think I definitely think it's important to help people. It's important to have a business. It's important to slay and do all those things. But really, like, people are what matter, and being a being on this earth and taking time to just be present in the moment is probably what matters most of all, right? And being in the now. So that was such a big, again, reminder and a reason that I'm wanting to move and wanting to have this experience in Mexico, and then maybe going to Bali at some point and like other countries and just being there in the moment. But then also, I think again, what rings true for me, and hopefully you've gotten some value to this podcast. I know that I'm just all over the place. Like, it's a lot. I just think the world, what taught me this time that I had the experience of in Otro last time, that's why I want to go back, and that's why I did go back, is I think the world's a lot more spiritual than we give it credit for. And I just talked to an older client today, and she said, you seem more mature in many ways, and one of the ways that you seem different is that you seem more understanding of what's not measurable, what's not necessarily in grasp or what we can measure. I think that's how she said it. And she's right. Like, I feel like I'm a lot more humble. There's a lot I don't know about the world. And I think before Ocho and before this whole experience, I thought I knew a lot and I thought I was in control. And I realized that I'm not. And there's a lot of this world that I just can't explain, that we can't explain. And there's been so many spiritual woo, the stars aligned, fates, odd coincidences that have happened to me this year. One just happened to me this week where it was like I had a conversation with someone that I don't know how or didn't expect it, but I needed to hear every single thing they said. And it was from the person that it came from. It was not expected, but it was absolutely needed for me at that time. The universe was basically giving me what I needed without knowing that I needed it. I just think this world is a lot more connected and spiritual and woo and witchy and whatever you want to call it, than we ever gave it credit for, and how much I ever gave it credit for. And I think I've had this resistance to it because I grew up in such a religious Christian environment. And I'm not saying that's what the world is, but I am saying maybe I just didn't want to see the spiritual side of the world until now. And now that I'm open to it, it just seems like I see it everywhere, which is a total psychological bias, that there's a whole concept for that. But I don't know. I'm choosing to lean into it. And the harm of it is that I just see the world from a different lens, but I help more people. So whatever, I'm fine with it, even if I'm totally wrong and I'm just tripping. Yeah, I think that like that's everything, is that the world's I don't know, the universe is there for you, I guess, is the end of what I want to say. And that if you let things happen, if you stop trying to resist the friction so much, I think that's what I realized recently too, is that I'm been so used to fighting against friction, and that's how I've gotten to where I've gotten. So there's some cognitive dissonance of like, you shouldn't just let things go. You do have to fight against friction, but when it's so intense, maybe you should just let the world guide you where it's guiding you. And right now the world is guiding me to leave for a little bit and go on a whirlwind of being free and having an adventure. So I'm excited for that. And I think it's the next step of recovery for me. Even though I've been recovered for a long time, I think there's always been like a little bit of pseudo kind of in it. But I think the next step of my own healing journey is to really experience life without being in it whatsoever. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope that the beginning didn't trigger you too much. I hope that it came across as genuine and just like caring and concern for both sides, because obviously what originally happened to Israel was not okay. And then now the war itself is not okay and people are just dying and it's just like appalling. And then there's some crazy election happening in the States soon, and that's just disappointing as well. And it just feels like a lot. But hopefully in our own little corner of the world, we can make a difference, and hopefully you can take care of yourself today. So let me know if any of that was interesting to you. I hope you like it. Please be sure, if you listen to this, to give the podcast a rating and review. It always helps me out. If you are looking for more help, you can always join my next group coaching program that starts June 1st. So if you want to be a part of that, you need to join in May. You can go to my website to find out more, or you can work with me one-on-one. I am taking one-on-one clients and have a few different offers for that going on. And you can look at my Instagram. I'm posting a lot more art. It's bingebreakers_bulimia, and posting a lot more just random stuff and probably more clips of the retreat as things go on. And if you are interested in a retreat, message me, DM me. I am planning on advertising this soon for a November retreat. And after, I'm having a conversation with Ocho tomorrow about the next retreat and that sort of stuff. So after that, I will be able to confirm things. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. Never give up on yourself, my friends. Bye.